Mini episode 96 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Sports Train, the finest pure sports talk show on both terrestrial and internet radio. Follow them on the web at thesportstrain.net.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everybody. We've got a great mini episode here today. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. It is part six of the nine-part Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania anthology.
You know, I had no idea that it was close to go time here. Yeah. And considering, like, the political debate we just had, like, yeah. I'm still sort of, like, gathering myself. I don't know how you transition, you know, some of that, you know, this the 1988 presidential race to the Allied powers versus the Blue Brothers. Are we able to do this?
Yeah. I mean,
I know nothing is off limits at FDH.
Well, right.
Apparently, after listening to your latest diatribe, a few things are off limits in the FDH Lounge.
Yes.
But
gay marriage among them, at least from my point of view. But no, here's the thing, though. We're doing this in a mini-episode format now. But you got to remember, the 152 episodes that we did over 4.5 years when we were distributed by the Sports Talk Network, we would go in one segment from, you know, hardcore political crap to pro wrestling to the NFL to whatever. Me and you talking about stuff like this right before we flipped the mics on, no big deal,
yeah,
man.
I'm actually saying I literally had no idea we were starting, though. I was just standing here with the mic, and I'm like, we are going. You're like, wow, this WrestleMania 11 only had 7 matches. I'm like, it did, Ricky. That's correct. Okay, welcome to mini episode. Okay, here we go. WrestleMania 11 through 13.
Yeah, well, that's you know, there's a lot to criticize here on these shows.
This is the low point in company history about to enter. This is, you know, we've waxed. I didn't mean to cut you off. But we've waxed nostalgic largely.
Right.
For, you know, that's why I think some of these earlier ones we went so long. There's so much that even though they're, you know, most of them, you know, I have ranked as in the poorer WrestleManias, but there's a lot of this waxing nostalgia. That ended with a horrible thud with WrestleMania 9. And then WrestleMania 10 wasn't so much nostalgia. I just really appreciate the booking, I think, a little more so than you. This is just like, this is the only one that I think is almost like kind of a chore. Like, yeah, we got to do these.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's going to end on a positive tease going to the next ones, which is good. But until we get there, it's going to be just being critical.
But
I don't like doing.
I think everything works out the way that it's supposed to on these things because for me and you, off air a minute ago here, engaging in some caustic political banter and humor, that's a good tone setter for this because we are going to need our sense of humor. We are going to need the same biting cynicism that we bring to talking about Mitt Romney and Barack Obama to discussing WrestleManias 11 through 13.
Yeah.
It is a perfect state of mind kind of a thing here. WrestleMania 11. We had started to talk about this with 10, that 10 put Bret Hart on top, but by the end of the year, he had tumbled back down the ladder to the 1A, soon to be maybe 1B position here in the promotion. Diesel was on top after the split with Shawn Michaels, and that set the tone for there was to be, this was essentially a double main event show because you did have Diesel against Shawn Michaels
for
the WWF
hot
championship.
Once they split up, that was the obvious hot program.
Right.
Michaels, it was considered such a formality that he was going to win the Royal Rumble.
Right.
That they put him in at number one and let him run the table. And that is the worst Rumble ever. Although I loved the ending.
It was 30 seconds, wasn't it? I mean, it was
no,
boom,
it was a
boom,
minute.
Boom.
It was a minute. It's the shortest Rumble ever.
Okay.
It's the least amount of depth. I mean, the Bushwhackers were in this in 95.
Right.
I mean, this is a dread. And they were, like, just bad. Dick Murdoch. I remember Vince McMahon at one point actually had the balls to say, Dick Murdoch's going to WrestleMania. And then I just was like, okay, there goes that buy rate. Okay.
Yeah. And that's, and again, it really shows you, too, the complete lacking in depth of the promotion. We talked about it previously about Jerry Jarrett coming in for a period of time. I think he was gone by 95, but that period of 93 through 95, on through this show when the Raw era had come in, episodic programming from week to week. But
Raw was not what it was when it started, and certainly not what it was today. It was very boring and stale during this period.
Well, it was, but here's the thing, too. What this reminds me of, because Diesel and Michaels had been the tag team champions until they're split up at the Survivor Series, and then Diesel goes on to win the title.
We're also in the Click heyday, by the way.
We are, but here's the thing, and this, it reminds me of basically territorial wrestling, be it Memphis or whatever, in terms of the thinness of it. I mean, you could just, this would be like Lawler and Dundee doing a program, okay? Like, they were tag team champions, yeah. Then they lost the belts, one of them becomes the heavyweight champion, and they square off. Because Memphis had to do that. Memphis was reliant on the main events because down the card, there just wasn't a whole lot. And you'd have to go back to the mid-80s to find a time when they had any kind of depth there. That's what this reminds me of, Kyle Ross, because you've got a thing where with Diesel and Michaels, I mean, for them to pivot so effortlessly from the tag team scene to the main event scene for the WWF Championship tells you all you need to know about the major players in their way. This is as thin as this promotion probably has ever been in the expansion era.
It's important to note that Vince had been acquitted in the trial of his life.
Yes.
Between these WrestleManias in August. You know, if you ever want to read about it, that is one of the most, I mean, short of the O.J. Simpson trial, which is obviously a much more serious charge.
Right.
You know, we can't make light of that. There has never been a more bizarre courtroom saga played out.
Right.
Than this, I mean, you had Nails threatening to kill. I mean, we're going way up, but threatening to kill Vince McMahon. And he gets acquitted. Okay, make a long story short, he gets acquitted. So now it's kind of like, all right, well, now it's time to build things back up. And then they went with Diesel as, quote, the new Hogan. They have him beat Bob Backlund in 9 seconds at Madison Square Garden. And he just kind of like Bret Hart. You know, they did it in a more deliberately shocking fashion than Bret Hart's first title win. But again, you felt like this was a step back.
Yeah.
His title reign. And again, you know, the Michaels thing, it was so natural. And the dynamic here, I guess we're going to talk about this match first, even though this match is not the biggest newsworthy match on the show, even though it's the world title match. This was...
It didn't close it.
No, it didn't close.
20 minutes and 35 seconds. It was the anchor of the show in that sense.
Yeah, from the you know, the touring part and, you know, the heart of the company. It was the major storyline, but it is, you know, one of the WrestleMania 8, obviously, the world title match did not close the show, and this one didn't either. It's interesting in the fact that this was the first time since Hogan that you had a babyface champion coming into WrestleMania.
Right.
And then it was the first time since Hogan beat Andre that the babyface champion retained the title.
Yes.
That was, you know... And
six was two babyfaces, but I see what you mean.
But he dropped the title.
Yes.
And that is a formula that, you know, with the world title, with a babyface coming in and retaining, that is a formula that you just haven't seen very much after this. And you didn't see a lot in the ones leading up to that. Well, I guess Bret Hart was a babyface going, and he drops to... But, you know, the dynamic, I guess the legacy of this, what I'm getting at, as the match played out, Diesel and Shawn, the dynamic was just off. The crowd turns kind of in Shawn's favor because Shawn was out working him. You know, Bret Hart's kind of, you know, was very critical of Shawn, saying basically he kind of did it on purpose. You know, he kind of used the you know, he brought in Sid. We should mention that too.
Sympathetic, yeah.
We should mention that too, that he had brought Sid in as his bodyguard.
Right.
You know, since then Sid had had some success in the USWA.
The dynamic of big, not great working face defending the title against smaller heel who's carrying the match in a work rate sense
and
was very difficult.
And the crowd was smarter than it was now
than
the Hogan era, where they could appreciate who the star of the match was. It wasn't necessarily the good guy.
Right.
It was the guy carrying the match, and it was clearly Shawn. And Bret's kind of just out and out accused Shawn of kind of just like – grabbing, you know, being a spotlight hog, basically saying
right.
he was going to use this match, even though the
planting the seeds for a face turn.
The point of this match, you know, is kind of established Diesel as his number one babyface, and Shawn kind of usurped the heat during the course of the match, whereas when Diesel did the Hulk up, the crowd was booing him.
Right.
And it's not a bad match. It's like in that 3 3/4 star range.
Right.
As far as a world title match in the early WrestleManias, it's one of the better, despite the screwed up dynamic, it's
right.
one of the better wrestling match. I mean, certainly better than the majority of like the Hogan stuff Hogan gave you.
Right.
But from a star power perspective, though, this WrestleMania was not there. First of all, the event was in Hartford. We should bring up.
A step back. Yeah. Much like how after WrestleMania 3, they go from the Dome to Trump Plaza, which was a step backwards.
Trump Plaza was a big mecca for boxing in those eras.
Well, in relative standards, you're going from the absolute apex of 93,000 worked or otherwise to Trump Plaza as opposed to another Dome. So in a relative sense, you're going from the apex to something great but still smaller. You've got WrestleMania 10 the year before at MSG, all the splendor of that. And
we
you
didn't
go
talk
to the,
about what a good job they did promoting the heritage of WrestleMania.
They
WrestleMania
did.
10, by the way. They had a lot of great video packages.
Yeah.
I
spent
enjoyed
a
that.
Lot of time building up to it. It was almost kind of like the same thing here of a retrench. The Hartford Civic Center, I just, to this day, I can't believe they
Very
had it there.
Very emblematic of the lack of interest going into the WrestleMania. You know, WrestleMania 9, when we did that, I said I had, there. By far, there was no greater drop-off in interest from a WrestleMania to the next than 8
right.
to 9. Personally, I was more psyched for 10 than 9. It kind of bumped back up. Now, I don't know if,
right.
I don't think the numbers bear that out. WrestleMania for years kind of trended down until it hit the nadir in 13.
But critically, 10 was a blip up in a bad era.
Yeah,
horrible
but
era.
I think the people that were watching, it was a smaller sample size, were, you know, I don't mean to speak for anyone, were looking more forward to WrestleMania 10 because you had the two title matches, Bret
right.
Owen, ladder match. There's more to kind of sink your teeth into and from. You got to remember, it was largely a smart crowd that had stuck
right.
around. Not largely, but a good percentage was a smart
right.
crowd. And that was more stuff they could sink their teeth into, good matches. This, I remember, probably except for like maybe the last couple years, to be honest. So my interest in wrestling was at its low point, I can speak.
Well,
so, I remember, because as I've said many times, and as you know,
mm-hmm.
I was a huge Shawn Michaels fan, and I was the last thing holding me in was the fact he was going to main event or be in the world title match at WrestleMania.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, I'll see what they do with this. If he wins, which he probably won't, you know, I'll stick with it. If he loses, just screw, I don't really like Diesel. Just, you know, just to heck with it. I'm not really interested in this product anymore.
Right.
WCW at this point was abysmal.
They were.
Okay,
yeah.
They had fallen off. They had tried to recreate the 80s of the WWF with everyone 10 years older and just awful. It was just awful.
Yeah.
So wrestling as a whole was at its low point. And this main event, I think, Shawn Michaels is obviously a huge name now, and Nash Diesel would go on to be a big name too in the NWO. But
right.
going in, this just had the feeling. These guys were not perceived at the level of the guys in previous main events.
Well, how are you going to sell this to the mainstream? And
basically,
well, that's what it gets to.
And that's transition.
This was a card, ultimately, where although the Godwins wouldn't come in until later in the year, you got the sense that Vince was going into the hog pen and throwing poop at the wall because this card was just start to finish. At least it was short, and that's the thing in terms of the number of matches.
Well, they didn't have a lot of people they could turn to. I mean,
well,
there were not a lot of there were no quality performers that were left off this card.
Unless he was injured, why was the 1-2-3 kid?
He may have been injured. He was in the corner of Razor Ramon.
Yeah, but I found that to be interesting.
Okay,
now he's not a quality performer. But Sid's got star power at least.
Well, true, but and he would be pushed. I mean, there was a storyline.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Diesel Shawn way. Diesel goes over.
Right.
And then the next night, they started up. That's when they did the monthly pay per view. Start up right
In
after
your house
the show
was coming up. Yeah, the first
and
one.
And the big draw was going to be they were going to do a Diesel Shawn rematch. But they kind of cut this weird interview where they're like, yeah, it was kind of weird. You know, that's still my boy. You know, this feud doesn't feel natural.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say feud, but they're like, that didn't feel natural fighting him, which was kind of funny because they were right. I think they were touching on a little reality that people didn't really want to see them wrestle.
Right.
And so, you know, Sid, you know, Sean's like, I'll give you the night off. Sid is my bodyguard. I'm going to go at Diesel man to man. Sid gets pissed, turns on him.
Mm-hmm.
Sean goes babyface. Sid's the top heel, and then 1995 stinks.
Well, they couldn't have done the match the next month anyways because, as I remember, Sid kind of botched the powerbomb and injured his back for real.
Well, really?
That Sean was I'm not sure that the idea was to go through with the Sean Diesel rematch.
No, I don't think it ever was.
But they couldn't have anyways.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't.
If you're, he didn't wrestle on that show, and I don't think it was just a matter of selling the injury.
Oh.
So, yeah, somehow or another, Sean's back wasn't 100%. At that point. But this ended up not being the main event of the show as far as closing the show. It was a co-main event in terms of how it was billed. The main event of the show, and this is what I talk about throwing poop at the wall here, you go back to the Royal Rumble tag team title tournament. In the finals of the tournament, the Ted DiBiase managed team from the corporation of Bam Bam Bigelow.
You talk about something that was so hackneyed and emblematic of this era. The Ted DiBiase Corporation.
I like that idea in theory.
Well, yeah, it was
they
a lot better when Vince
horrible,
McMahon.
But here's the thing, though. DiBiase as manager, like I always thought that before he left at the very end, JBL would have been good in that role of the. I like the whole moneyed corporation kind of a thing. Any kind of a knockoff of the Horseman that you can make work.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is who they put in it. You go back to the previous year, Tatanka joins in a heel turn on Lex Luger.
Well, he did what his people should have done years ago and taking the money,
Exactly, yeah, as opposed to $24 and some beads for the island of Long Island or whatever it was, or Manhattan, I guess. But anyways, you got this. So Lawrence Taylor gets into an altercation with Bam Bam Bigelow.
Who was the most talented guy in the corporation, probably.
Yes, that Taylor was laughing at Bam Bam.
Because they lose to the babyface underdog team of Kid and Holly,
yeah.
Bob Holly.
Yeah, and I said...
And he should be laughed at for losing to them.
I said to you off air, how does it make sense that Bam Bam does the job in that match and then is in the final match at WrestleMania? Unless they were trying to do it, unless it was an overt presentation of Bam Bam Bigelow as a fairly mediocre pro wrestler, can Lawrence Taylor, a non-wrestler, defeat a fairly mediocre pro wrestler? Yeah,
well, he had to lose to set the angle up to have LT laughing at him.
Couldn't it have been the same, like, say Tatanka loses, they get into a shoving match or whatever, Tatanka loses first, you know, Taylor's just laughing in general.
Yeah, I guess
you could still sell the frustration even if he hadn't eaten the pinfall.
All right, look, here's the problem with this. It's obvious, the whole thing. Let me just bottle it.
It was a desperate attention grab.
Okay, yeah, you took the... Never mind that.
Oh!
Okay. Okay. All right, yes, yeah. It was.
I'm sorry, I was bogarting your whole point.
Yeah,
okay.
That was pretty much the meat and potatoes, the crux of the argument that, yes, this was total desperation. They looked at a card that they, you know, did a bad number anyway. But that they needed something to get the mainstream public to buy into, so they went with Lawrence Taylor. Let's put the wrestling dynamic aside for just one second.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem I had with this is LT was several years well, look, make no mistake about it. I believe Lawrence Taylor was the greatest defensive player in the history of the NFL.
Okay.
Whether you agree with that or not is irrelevant because he's in the discussion, okay? He was a major name in the history of this league.
Sam Huff says hi.
Sam Huff, give me a break. Okay, Dad. All right. Thanks for coming over. Sam Huff.
Wow. I didn't think you ran a crap on it that badly.
Sam Huff.
Well, it's just the first name that came to mind. I don't know. Who else would I go with? Bruce Smith? I don't know.
He's up there. Reggie White.
Okay.
You know, they can turn a wristwatch into a toaster oven. I wonder if Jeremy Lin can do that.
Oh!
That's Reggie's words, not mine.
Nice.
But he was several years, and to me, it wasn't like he was playing. It wasn't like this was done. It wasn't like when they got, say, Refrigerator Perry in 86 at WrestleMania 2. There's a comparison.
No, you're right.
He was kind of past his prime. He had some kind of, you know, publicized troubles. You know, this reeked of just desperation on all sides. WWE needing a celebrity and LT needing money for crack.
Yeah.
Okay.
And underage whores.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
not to put too fine a point on
yes,
it.
Yes, but yeah, that's, yeah, well, there you go. And it, I guess it did draw some eyes, you know, because, I mean, it got them on SportsCenter. You know, they of course, showed the gratuitous SportsCenter plugs. I don't know how you felt about, I don't know if you have Charlie Steiner in the same category as Colin Coward. Well, that's a different story for a different
Charlie
day.
Charlie Steiner got out and kept his credibility, but, by the way, the other celebrity aspect of this thing here, we glossed over it. Pamela Anderson in the corner of Diesel,
right.
And Jenny McCarthy along with Psycho Sid in the corner of Shawn Michaels.
They decided
desperate
that the talent roster was not marquee enough, and they just went out with celebrity. JTT with a cup of coffee here.
I believe Salt and Peppa sang Lawrence Taylor to the ring.
Yeah, yeah. Nick Turturro from NY, who I thought gave a kind of a workmanlike effort as a celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, he was certainly the least impressive name of the group, but I thought he tried. You know,
he gave a good
accounting for himself as the ring announcer. But
right. But it just shows you the tier of celebrities here versus like WrestleMania 1 or whatever, how they'd fallen.
Yeah, wrestling was not cool at this point.
No.
Not to, you know, and it the match itself is not bad. LT versus Bigelow. As far as there's non-wrestlers and there's non-wrestlers.
It really exceeded the low expectations.
Yeah, LT, I will give him credit. And everyone admits this.
And Bam Bam carried him.
Everyone admits this. LT did a good job of getting into shape.
Yeah.
And he took it seriously. You know, I mean, there's some of these celebrities get out there. And granted, now they were never put in a position like
Learned
that.
Learned the moves. What a maneuver.
Yes. Well, yeah, yeah. Even Vince could call Lawrence Taylor's moveset, I think.
Yes.
But here's the problem with the match, and you knew it going in. And it was going to kill the career of Bigelow. It didn't make the career of Bigelow. It killed him. And they tried this face turn afterwards.
Sympathetic turn,
And that could have worked.
Well, the click buried him.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Diesel hated him and didn't want to team up with him at King of the Ring. They did. Remember the main event of King of the Ring 95, Diesel and Bigelow versus Sid and Tatanka.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a thing where...
Not exactly when the mega powers meet the mega bucks.
No,
okay.
Exactly. And here's the problem. You need wrestling logic to work to at least some degree. So let's look at this in a kayfabe sense. The corporation has put everything on this match.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. They were like the big heel group, and that was their only... Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
They,
and afterwards, and Ted DiBiase is calling him a loser because he lost to a non-wrestler. And we're supposed to disagree with Ted DiBiase just because he's an objectionable fellow? From a kayfabe standpoint,
you're right.
It doesn't hold up.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, the corporation kind of rebuilt it because Sid, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they were pricks about it, but in a kayfabe sense, they weren't wrong.
It killed Big... You know, even till his days down the road.
Yeah.
Didn't you always, when you looked at Bam Bam Bigelow... You know, now there were other people who probably maybe didn't even watch during this year that didn't know.
Right.
Okay, and that helps, you know, when he came back. But, like, you know, he kind of rebuilt his image a little bit in ECW.
Right.
And then, you know, he came in with a bit of steam challenging Goldberg in WC. I love that angle, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, they could have gone somewhere that didn't do anything, typical of that era. But he always had that stink, at least with me, having watched it of, God, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow, very talented big man, but he was like, he's the classic what could have been guy. Injuries screwed his first reign up with WWF.
Right.
Second reign, totally killed by this.
It was, but here's the thing, too, and I go back
and it's proven he was gone by the end of the year.
In different circumstances.
He wasn't even in the company the next year.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. I mean, and he would have these spaces where he was out of the mainstream and then would reappear somewhere. It was never a linear thing with him. Oh, just shows up immediately here, aside from when he screwed over ECW, allegedly, and showed up in WCW like that. But here's the thing, though. I don't look at him in the same way. I almost feel like I'm downgrading Bam Bam to make the comparison because he was a better worker than Luger. But I look at Bam Bam, and again, I'm a kid of the 80s with the After Mags, and it's a thing where I look at Bam Bam as, gee, I thought his career was going to be more than that. The same way I looked at Luger.
Yes. No, though, that's a very...
Do you see the same thing?
I could almost put, to a lesser, Sting in that same case.
Sting
kind of like... Yeah, there's a lot... Well, Sting...
These men will be the superstars of the 90s!
And they weren't. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, you made... Yes.
Unlike Larry Cameron, at least they were on this side of the earth.
Yeah,
but
yeah
still.
Exactly. You know, the Bigelow-Luger comparison is valid.
Yeah.
You just knew.
And this was a nail in the coffin moment for Bigelow, such as Luger had in his career.
And he just didn't get the right. I mean, like I said, he was out of the promotion in 8 months.
Because
the click didn't like it. That sped it up.
In the late 80s, I mean, before he even got to the WWF, there's a reason. Because we talked about it in the previous WrestleManias. When he came in and he was so hot in the early days there, he was carrying the momentum in from the territories. He was a killer, like in Memphis and in World Class and those places. I mean, the late 80s, Bam Bam Bigelow.
He was, like we talked about it when he first came, was the number two babyface for very short at the 87 Survivor Series.
Big fat guys were not supposed to be able to fly around like
that.
But it was
over.
A waste. Yeah. So, I mean, he's one of these guys. You look at it with both Bigelow and Luger. You can look at it and say, okay, well, how many guys even main evented WrestleMania or whatever, but these are guys that were probably supposed to have multiple ones under their belts and never did. And that's how that went.
And unfortunately, Sean, that's what's remembered. When you think of WrestleMania 11, if I say name two letters from WrestleMania, what do you say? But if I said, tell me one thing, what's the first thing that pops in your mind when I mention WrestleMania 11?
Well,
Lawrence Taylor. Yeah. It's Lawrence Taylor, and that's not a good thing.
Well, and putting it on in the main event spot. It's one thing
if it's like a middle of the card thing, you're right. But
yeah, but it's
against
like
a guy that you're maybe just saying, hey, you know what, a guy, Bam Bam, it's not like he had like this ton of heat built up for a while. If it's a guy who you want to just job out of the promotion,
right,
that's what you do. A guy who's been doing like, You know what? Like
you still don't put a guy in the main event spot that you're jobbing out of the promotion. It's got to be an investment.
But how
do you make an investment in a guy that's doing the job?
It's antithetical. You know, although I loathed at the time and still loathe it to this day,
mm-hmm.
from the promotion's perspective,
mm-hmm.
a fair, I don't know if that's the right word, example of jobbing a guy, giving a guy a... There's a difference between just like doing a mean spirit, like The Miz, what they've done to The Miz last week is mean spirit.
Poor Miz.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's making a big deal about the guy's exit. He doesn't leave in a flattering way at all.
Right.
But it's kind of like a big deal, not like an afterthought.
Right.
Would be like Jeff Jarrett when he did the big JOB to China out the door.
How about we talked about WrestleMania 3, Adrian Adonis?
Adrian Adonis, yeah. He had built up all this heat for a long time.
Right.
And it's like he gets his from kind of an unlikely source. Piper's a more likely source. That's kind of why I went with the China Jarrett thing.
Okay.
China, an unconventional opponent.
Right.
It works then, but not if you're going to try to push the guy on top. And
It was just ridiculous how that ended up going. Yeah, this is the first thing everybody thinks of. But we talked about it before. WrestleMania 8 sort of broke the seal as far as the world title match was defended in the middle of the card before intermission. But that's because you had the Hogan match on last.
And this
was not before
intermission. This was the second to last match, kind of a slap in the face.
They'd kind of done away with the concept of intermission, I think, by this point.
Oh, intermission was gone.
Yeah,
true. That's very true, Ricky.
My point is, it's one thing when, you've still got Hogan in the promotion and you're going to put him on last. But it's another thing altogether when it's Lawrence Taylor. You've relegated the world title to an earlier spot on the card for your desperation celebrity angle. And then that was just emblematic of the desperation of the time.
It would have almost been like putting Floyd Mayweather, Big Show, on last instead of Edge Undertaker.
Well, and here's the thing, too. They toyed around at that show because of the magnitude of it. Of putting the Flair match on last, and Flair, I think, is reputed to, and Michaels is reputed to have said, no, you got to put a title match on last. You got to do that.
At least that would have been less offensive, because at least you're talking about touring guys.
Right. And that also, too, there was some talk about should Hogan Rock have gone on last at 18, and it ended up being Triple H Jericho, and they couldn't follow it, much like how in 2009 Triple H and Orton couldn't follow what came before.
And but that's why, of course, I don't think anyone's talking. Well, this year, I don't think Rock Cena's going on before intermission.
No. Clearly it will not be. So, tradition or no, they've learned their lesson on this one here. Blowing through a weak undercard, The Allied Powers, a potentially promising tag team, but that they never pulled the trigger.
Well, Luger quit.
Never
Luger
made
quit
them champs.
Him. Yeah.
Well, they were probably going to, I think they were going to break them up at that point. Weren't they doing the Davey Boy Smith turn anyways?
That was going to be a thing. You're right. They never, who was, oh.
I kind of don't get why they didn't give them a run on top. Luger and the British, but in a thin period of time, too. Luger and the British Bulldog, an interesting team. Defeating the Blue Brothers, Jacob and Eli with Uncle Zebediah as the neo-Nazi Harris Brothers in one of their incarnations in the big time here.
Lex Luger, how the mighty have fallen from one WrestleMania to the next.
Yes, exactly. Wrestling an opening match against a couple guys who had to cover up their swastikas with ring gear in order to be able to go out there at WrestleMania. So nothing much more needs to be said about that one.
They were the Allied Powers.
Yeah, they were. The one thing I'll say is this. Theoretically, we talked about stepping stone Mania matches from at the past, whether it be at WrestleMania 3 with the Can-Am Connection, whether it be with the LOD at WrestleMania 7. Theoretically, this match could have been used to set them up for a title match.
It was
or
a token throwaway to put them over. You know, it was just,
But it could have been a stepping stone match.
But because it wasn't, it makes it even worse.
They didn't
and
go that
more
way.
Pointless.
Yeah, they didn't go
good
that
point.
Way with it.
Good point, Ricky.
Thank you. Thank you. Razor Ramon with a 1-2-3 kid defeated Intercontinental Champion Jeff Jarrett with a roadie by disqualification. Singles match for the Intercontinental title at 13:32. This was at the tail end of when they would still do those screw job title finishes.
Yeah, the problem was that they did the title change at the Royal Rumble. They probably didn't want to job Ramon again, or Ramon didn't want to job again.
Yeah.
And so they do this all, you know. Jarrett was so overrated during this period. I'm sorry. Jarrett's always been overrated.
Yeah.
But it made sense. It's like, okay, like I remember when they did the program with him and Ramon. It's like, okay,
right.
Jarrett's going to get the title.
JOBBER.
Yeah, exactly. And it just kind of was like, I remember like just like when he has the best match of his career against Shawn Michaels in the summer when he loses it in Nashville. They made a big deal. He was booed in his hometown or whatever. And I just remember just being like, thank God they got the belt off him.
He's a guy, like I look at him with his training and his capability and everything like that.
He kind of was maybe that Luger
so much,
Bigelow, you know, like
yeah, he should he, but he, I look at him a little bit differently in a sense of he should be so much better than he is. His matches don't have very good psychology. He doesn't seem to string together things.
Other than
much.
That Michaels match,
yeah,
In Your House 2,
yeah,
okay, which is a tough tape to get a hold on, kids. So
yeah,
well, then again, you can just go on YouTube these days, damn kids.
Yeah,
but what's Jeff Jarrett's second best match ever?
Oh, I don't
Do
even.
Do we want to spend any time
no,
doing this?
No,
okay.
That's.
I'm leaving that up to the listener. What is Jeff Jarrett's second best match ever?
Yeah, he's nothing to write home about. But he should be, though. Like, I look at him like he should be. He's got a decent move set. He's got, I don't know. I guess if he had a better head for stringing together matches, I think he could be a superstar.
Nobody's second generation. I mean.
But he doesn't have the most charisma in the world either. I don't know. Maybe I think he should be more than he is, should have been more than he is.
He's a guy that I think maybe came around a little too late. He could have been a great territorial. I mean, obviously,
oh, sure.
You know, territory. He just like
isn't that what TNA is? So.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But even then, he just seemed kind of like overrated, which is bad.
I mean, he was the Orlando.
Well, but then again, the problem with him
he was
in
the
TNA,
Orlando City champion for a couple of times.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. But even the problem with him in TNA is you just know he's there because WWF doesn't want him,
right?
Which is a big problem,
right?
But that's a different
podcast exactly.
For a different day, as they say.
Yes, Undertaker defeated King Kong Bundy singles match with Larry Young as guest referee. I don't know. I don't remember how that came to pass.
Baseball was on strike still, maybe.
When Larry Young was an umpire?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I don't know why he didn't factor into the match. The Undertaker wins the clothesline. There are a few things as uninspired as the 1995 return of King Kong Bundy.
Yeah, that was not a good run. Owen Hart and Yokozuna, the tag team champions.
By the way, that starts continue, I guess, with Giant Gonzalez. The Undertaker just being fed these awful opponents, which why he's, you know, when people curse his existence still being around today, you have to feel for what the guy went through during this period.
Giant Gonzalez and
Kamala,
that whole era, Kamala
Yokozuna. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was.
God bless his soul.
That was a bad era. Owen Hart and the aforementioned Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette, the tag team champions, defeating the Smoking Guns. Billy and Bart Gunn.
Yokozuna, importantly, he was a mystery partner here. He had disappeared since the Survivor Series. He lost the casket match to The Undertaker.
Okay.
Neidhart had been fired. and Owen Clinton, and they did some kayfabe thing where, I need to have a real partner and get a real shot. You know, I got a mystery partner for WrestleMania. And it was one of those deals where I always hated the smoking guns anyway. I didn't like how they
were. Oh, they were horrible.
I hated how they wrestled in jeans. That really I just always viewed that as very uncomfortable, and they had, like, bad mullets and mustaches.
I was never that impressed with their move set. They never.
There were some matches where they tried hard. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
But here the issue. I just hated the jeans so much. But anyway, once it was one of those deals where once Owen Hart introduced Yokozuna as a mystery partner, there was nobody in that building that thought that there wasn't going to be a title switch. And I remember this match going too long. Like, it should have just been, like, a huge squash.
And actually, as I read this again, the Guns were the champs, and then they dropped the belts here. The one thing is, too, hindsight's 20/20, but and I understand that Yokozuna had to do the return job to The Undertaker, but the fact that, you know how after a guy's on top, particularly when he's a heel, he's got to repay some jobs to some of the guys that he beat in there?
Yeah.
In retrospect, you would have rather had Yokozuna be less jobbed out so that he could have had a credible main event or two. Not that the matches would have been great, but the star power of him in there with Diesel.
Yeah, the thing is, they tried it with Mabel, and that worked wonders. But I can only imagine, who knows. But the problem is I think that long reign he had, people were so like, oh, God, please put an end to give this title reign the old Yeller treatment. I know me, personally, watching the time, just did not want him in the main event. You're right, from a star power perspective, it could have helped. I just did not.
But especially in your house era, with monthly pay-per-views, throw it in there for a month.
Sure. But his weight was becoming a major concern.
It was.
As well. And Owen and Yoko should have worked better as a team.
Right.
It was amazing. Yokozuna would just come in obviously when Owen needed a rest or something for a quick minute.
Yeah.
He still put that damn nerve hold on.
Right.
He would be in there for a minute, and 30 seconds was that and he'd rest for God, it was.
We talk about the WWF, particularly in the 80s. They always loved tag teams like the Killer Bees, real similarities, whatever. Has there ever been a tag team of two guys less similar than Owen Hart and Yoko Zuna stylistically?
But those teams kind of work sometimes.
Sure, they do.
I mean, Brett and Jim Neidhart Brett and Jim Neidhart were certainly not as different.
You're right. The outfits were alike, but nothing else.
Yeah, but it should. You know what I'm saying? I thought the dynamic was kind of good on paper, where you had the big heavyweight who would just
and
come in and do the
chicken ass heel who would hide behind him.
Yeah, and Owen would do the bulk of the work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
It's kind of like the Dream Team if Brutus Beefcake weighed 600 pounds. So if they got together today, in other words.
Exactly. Real similarities there. The only other match we didn't talk about, the one that would be considered the third match on the card in terms of importance because of the star power of the guys in it, Bret Hart defeated Bob Backlund in an I Quit match with Roddy Piper as special referee at 9:34. This is one Bret talks about at some length in his memoirs as being disappointed with and feeling that it was goofy.
It's one of those things that, like, Ray Charles could see that Bret was getting his job back here, you know, not to be disrespectful to anybody. And there was no heat behind it because they crushed Backlund so badly to Diesel. I've never seen a special guest referee hurt a match.
Mm-hmm.
Roddy Piper may have hurt this match. He was like, he kept asking, do you quit?
Bret inferred that. Being goofy.
Because I thought that was a Kyle Ross special, like something that only that's amazing Bret noticed. I really respect Bret's knowledge.
Well, here's the thing, too. And I don't, respect Bret as a past two-time guest on the show here. I don't want to put words in his mouth. It may be that Bret thought that the bookers, that whoever designed the match was having Roddy do that. I'm not saying Bret blamed Roddy directly, but I'm saying that Bret thought that the way that Roddy was doing the thing, whether it was his choice or somebody else's,
was
too
bad. He was like,
Do you quit?
Yeah, it was like kind of like, no, he doesn't, okay? Like, stop it, Roddy Piper. I'm going to punch you.
Yeah, but you know
what? By the way, this WrestleMania also that didn't help it had technical issues.
Right.
My video that I got, which is actually released by the company, I actually got the WrestleMania Anthology 1 through 13 way back when. It was like, this was like the replay, like, version. Like, there was technical problems. It's disappointing.
The last thing I'm going to say about that, the only person I blame is whoever decided Roddy Piper was going to be the special ref.
You
don't bring in Roddy Piper for the kind of subtle type nuances that you want from somebody holding the mic.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper's going to be a ham.
Yeah, this was a throwaway. I mean, it was a throwaway.
It's
anyway.
All he knows, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, you know, back when the nefarious means he used to win, but this is either the second or third worst. Right? 9 is the worst.
Right.
This is either the second or third worst. I change my mind sometimes. Okay. So by the way, in the bottom quintet there, we have 4 filled out, by the way, Ricky. I know you're
right.
Keeping score at home with pencil
yes.
paper. 1, 2, 9, and 11 are all in the bottom quintet there.
Okay. Well, so, 12 was no great shakes either. We'll get
but
to
an
that.
Improvement.
But 12 was an improvement, yeah. Interesting how that went with 9 and 11 and the odd ones being some of the absolute dregs
and
there.
And then 10 being all the way up top. You talk about a huge,
yeah.
you know.
And 12 was another upturn.
Not
which
nearly
would,
as big.
Which would lead to another downturn in 13
mm-hmm.
Because of it being the biggest one-match card maybe in pro wrestling history.
Well, from a not going in, not from a drawing perspective,
right.
from a retrospective, from a kind
historical
of a hindsight perspective.
Yeah.